It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Okay. The age-old football question is being asked again. No, that's not who wins between the immovable force and the irresistible defense. That's what's worse, jelly beans flung from a spoon across the cafeteria or overcooked fettuccine, when these phrases are used to describe your passes. For that, we ask the man who came up with these lines, Mike Tenier from Bleacher Report. Mike and Chris here. Thanks for your time.
Hey, I think you left out a slingshot made out of old hair scrunchies, which was another metaphor I used. Unfortunately, on one of the Bills' quarterbacks, but it has been that kind of year.
I was really fond of that. In fact, as I stepped out during the break, just preceding you coming on with us, Mike, and asked our producer, like, I read this thing earlier today, and he had just tweeted it out on our station account in advance of you coming on, and I said, what's the line about Barkley? And that's it, a slingshot made out of hair scrunchies. Like, that is descriptive. Like, I can see this device, and I like it.
You can see he's getting kicked out of Sunday school for using something like that.
Right.
You know, Barkley did what he had to do, certainly, last week. But I've been watching Barkley a long time. I'm based out of Philadelphia. I saw him for, you know, two off seasons and preseasons and starting a couple games here in Philadelphia. So they're a ticking clock for when that kind of throw it downfield and let her rip and let it all hang out starts turning from touchdowns against a bad opponent like the Jets into another set of interceptions for you. So you have a very limited shelf life. Hopefully Josh Allen will be back in the course of that.
And Bulldog here has a beard that could use scrunchies. Like, you could
I could tie some scrunchies into this thing, yes.
Make that work. Well, you know, I think we'd all agree, like, Allen throwing the ball would not be described in this way. But
no.
when he played, it didn't always go to the right place.
Right.
And I'm curious about Barkley. Like, I'm not going to argue with you about how his passes look, but
right.
one thing that I'm thinking about with him is he was never anybody's guy. Like, he was never a player like Allen is here, like lots of guys are, who, because of when they're drafted, that you are going to put them out there and see what that is. And Barkley was on two other teams that really he didn't rank, and then they changed coaches and he was out. So for this thing here, like, I'm certain that Allen will go back in, but I'm curious about Barkley, and he put a game up that I think will have fans will refer to it if Allen doesn't, you know, get it together when he comes back.
Fans will refer to it, and, you know, Barkley had the chance to be that guy. I believe it was his coming out of his junior year. He was supposed to be a consensus number one pick. He was supposed to be where Sam Darnold was his junior year at USC. And so, you know, he kind of has a very weak senior season. He winds up being a mid-round pick, which a lot of USC quarterbacks kind of wind up in that place. And in Philadelphia, you know, he had a handful of opportunities and really didn't shine in them in any way. And again, that also goes back to preseason opportunities and things like that. So, yeah, he gets the coaching change here. You really look at the Bears, and I guess you're right in that John Fox was on his way out, et cetera, et cetera. It was a pretty extended period of time. It was an extended airing out there. So I don't know. It's a chicken or egg thing. Like, why hasn't this guy ever had the full chance? Well, there have been several opportunities to have worked himself into that conversation. He's failed. And then, again, he has this game last week. I think credit to the coaching staff for not going complete turtle on the offense, because it was getting a little carried away with, you know, handoff on first down, handoff on second down, and maybe punt on third down. That's almost what it was looking like for a while. They didn't do that. They gave him some opportunities. You saw the caliber of opponent you were up against. That was a team that really didn't want to be there, I think. And it'll be different when you face better defenses down the ride. And I think you guys have a goal, and that is to get your young quarterback ready, get him to at least be in a position when he comes back to maybe make the leap forward guys like Mitchell Trubisky have made their second season.
Yeah, I sure hope that they maybe use the same. I mean, I know a game plan is going to be dependent on who you're playing and where you think the weaknesses are and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'd like to see Allen throw the ball down the sideline to Robert Foster a few times. And he did do that. Foster's been in and out here, practice squad, roster, cut, practice squad, back on the roster, and now makes some plays and ends up with 100 yards against the Jets. But, yeah, I want to see Allen get kind of an airing out a little bit and have a downfield element to their passing game, because that's why they drafted him.
Yeah, launch the ball. And you're right. We saw him launch the ball sometimes, and it was often, you know, landed in the stands or whatever. But nothing ventured, nothing gained. If all you're going to do is hand off up the middle for, like, a gain of a yard over and over again, you might as well fire some of them downfield. If they are overthrows, they're not going to be interceptions because they're going to go so far. And he's shown he can complete them. And he's also shown he ran the ball relatively well. And I don't think you want to do a lot of that because, again, you could risk injury. That's not what his future is. But do some things to create success. I think that's one of the things that, like, very conservative coaches lose track of the idea, like, create some success for this young man and then, you know, backfill on the other side of things, like some of the more technical stuff. Create some highlights, create some puzzles, opportunities that he feels good about himself, that some of these young players like Foster feel like they're with the program, and then backfill the program. And I think that's the goal. I think they probably should have maybe tried to do a little more with that with Peterman as well. I don't know what it would have amounted to, but it was nice to see them at least thinking in that direction when they put Barkley out there.
Mm-hmm. Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report. One reason we called you today, Mike, was to talk about, as a part of that same article, your comments about Tom Brady. That's the other line I mentioned, overcooked fettuccine. I think of people predicting the Patriots' demise like those moles in a whack-a-mole game. Like you stick your head up and you say, I think they're in decline, and then somebody whacks you. It's either someone else in the media or the Patriots themselves. They hit you and you go back down under. So you know the risks.
Yeah, we had that conversation. I was like DMing on Twitter with a couple of my colleagues, and it's like, I don't want to be the one who does it this time. So like, I guess I drew the short straw. I was the mole. It's like the weirdos in the cult, and like the end of the world is next week, and they have a cult, and they meet on a mountaintop, and then the world doesn't end, and the leader says, oh, I miscalculated, it's next year it's going to happen. And people stay in the cult. They always stay in the cult. But, you know, this is different because Father Time is on the side of those of us who are concerned, let's say, about Tom Brady aging. You guys, Buffalo Bills fans, saw it a couple weeks ago, and I just re-looked up the game, and yeah, it was 9-6, and your defense kind of had control of the Patriots' offense and had Brady uncomfortable, had him wondering where to throw, had him throwing off target for a big chunk of that game, and then you lose it in the fourth quarter for a couple of reasons. Part of it's your defense was probably on the field for like 88 years or whatever. But this has been continuing. It started with that Bills game. I think it really was evident in the Packers game, which you can't see in the final score because, you know, Edelman threw a touchdown pass, et cetera. And now you saw that. Other people are starting to put the statistics out. And I'll tell you right now, you know, you post something like that and 6 million people with Tom Brady jerseys on Twitter as their avatar come after you, and they start saying things like, you know, Tom Brady has not slipped at all. He's still ranked 9th in the NFL in this stat and 10th in the NFL in this stat. And I'm like, yeah, he's Tom Brady. He's 9th and 10th in the league in these things. That means it's obvious. You're agreeing with me. He slipped because he was 1, 2, and 3 for 20 years. And I think that's where we're at with that conversation.
Yeah, a lot of this is just watching him throw the ball, right? That's where the fettuccine thing comes in. And you reference in this piece Peyton Manning. And that was noticeable. Like watching the Bills were playing them that year, I remember. So I watched Manning. They were in primetime probably a couple times leading up to their game with the Bills. And I just remember saying on our show, like, the guy is not throwing it anymore. Like, he just can't. The ball is just wobbling. He's shot. And he got through it. But
yeah. It's not a tight spiral. It doesn't look like it leaves his hand right. The placement on the passes towards the outside are bad. Relying more on the passes over the middle of the field, which are just physically shorter passes because of triangles and how that works. You're moving in the pocket becomes a little harder. You're getting sacks more easily. You're getting off-balance throws more easily. You know, we saw him trip over his own feet on a trick play. All these little things add up. And, you know, for Manning, it started the previous year at the end, but it wasn't that big a deal. And then that year that they made it to the Super Bowl, it was crazy. But the fact is they made it to the Super Bowl, and that's where the Patriots can be this year. Obviously, they're still the Patriots. They got to win against the Bills. They got two more Jets games coming up, I think. They got more Dolphins games. They got you guys again. They're going to get into the playoffs, so they can find a way to win. But they can't, and I don't think anybody who's really watching, they can't just pretend, oh, it's the same old Brady, and he's going to beat you the same old way.
Who would you get? Who has a better chance to make the Super Bowl, the Patriots or the Steelers?
Oh, that's tough right now because the Steelers are firing on all cylinders. I will say this. If they meet face-to-face, it's going to be different. And I think they meet in two or three weeks. It's going to be different than it has been ever before, because it's going to be Roethlisberger still has all of his weapons, can still do whatever he wants, still gets apparently injured in games and comes back a play later, and Brady doesn't. And I think that's the one where if that comes out way, I think it's going to be where it's going to be a pretty convincing Steelers win right now. Then all the people who are making fun of me right now are going to be out there saying, yep, this is it. This is the reality. Now how do the Patriots survive? And that's where we're going to be.
Do you have any sense of whether the Patriots are being realistic about what Brady's condition is? Like, are they going to, do you think, alter things? Will that be the key to whether or not they can still have, you know, well, what is for them a successful year? 11 wins, 12 wins, go to the Super Bowl. Like, do you think that they'll change what they're asking him to do because of how he's throwing it right now?
I think there's been a little of that. If you really go back and look at the Titans game over again, I mean, they're going over the middle of the field constantly, and everything in the flat is designed with like a double screen or some kind of like misdirection or something like that to kind of hide the fact that all he's doing is trying to toss the ball to James White in space or Sony in space or somebody and make it work. So I think you're going to see more of that. You know, I say that, but then they ran that Philly special thing like they thought Brady was going to be able to turn up field and run for 25 yards. So there, it might be a little bit of a give and take there. I think the coaches understand. I think a question I have is, does Brady get it? Because this is a guy who does the Tom versus Time thing, and you know, does documentaries about himself, and like, what's the level of self knowledge there? Because ultimately, he's going to be the one who thinks he sees a guy 30 yards down the field along the sidelines and can fire it in there if that guy's open, and that's where the proof and the telling is, whether that turns into an interception, an incomplete pass, or he still finds a way to get it there.
And it's been, I get, the word I'm thinking of is difficult. There's a better one year for Gronkowski. I mean, he's done almost nothing, really. The first game, he had a good week the first week, and then it's just been injuries and more of that. What about him going forward? Like, watching him in the game here, I had some of the same feelings you're writing about having about Brady and what we're talking about. And I just wonder if this is it for him.
I feel that way. I think it was talked about all offseason. It's been mumbled about during the season. And it's a combination of somebody who feels his body breaking down and isn't, you know, Mr. 100% fit with the culture there, wondering why he's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy who could probably retire tomorrow and have cameos in Marvel movies and Fast and the Furious movies and have reality shows and play volleyball and do all these things. And he's got there and he's grueling. So I think we'll have to wait and see. But if you say at the end of the season, if we discover Rob Gronkowski wants out or wants to retire, it would not be shocking, I don't think, to anyone.
Mike Tenier from Bleacher Report. You're in Philly. Let's talk about the Eagles for a minute if you have time.
Ugh.
So I saw, yeah, must be tough. I saw a piece about the Eagles that agreed with my eye test about them, which I like when that happens. That one thing that like is different is they're not getting big plays. And like I was late to Carson Wentz because I saw a lot of misses. I'm like, are we sure? And then what would happen in games is he would just pull these plays out of his butt, the one in Washington last year and against Denver, and it's just like out of all the time. It was, wow, where did that come from? I didn't think there was any chance here, and there was a play, maybe a little bit like Favre used to do. And so that has, I think, decreased, and maybe with that, the Eagles, you know, their record is worse. So what do you see?
Yeah, there are a few more misses for guys who are open downfield and maybe one or two more odd decisions than we've seen in the past from Carson Wentz. And, you know, there's a couple of things that you could point to. One, of course, is he had a very he was at a limited offseason. He did throw the ball a lot in the offseason. That's part of it. But I look at the Eagles' offense overall, and I say, where are the big plays? And I say, some of those big plays appear to be in Indianapolis right now because I'll watch Colts footage and I'll see Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles last year, running a lot of that stuff with Andrew Luck and with a bunch of guys you've never heard of and getting that success. And it's like, it's been a little bit of a brain drain there. And it's like, well, if Carson Wentz's mechanics aren't 100% ideal, where's the quarterback's coach? Quarterback's coach is in Minnesota. Offensive coordinator DeFilippo is in Minnesota right now. So I think Carson is maybe not at full capacity, but he doesn't have the coaching staff around him. The creativity isn't quite where it needs to be. And they've had some problems at running back, so you don't necessarily get some of the big plays you were getting from your running game as well. And when you put it all together, you have a week like you had last week. So I'll put a little bit on Carson, but I think if you look at his overall skill set, he's likely to bounce back. Put a lot of it on Doug Peterson right now. Didn't get the replacement voices in the game planning room and in the design of the offense room that he needed in the offseason, and you're seeing that in the offensive performance. And then we could spend probably an hour talking about the defense as well.
And, right, Ronald Darby out, former Bill, a lot of injuries.
Yep.
There is an ex-Eagles receiver, Jason Avant, who said he thinks Peterson is losing the team. Would you give that any credibility?
I don't know. Avant's been out of here a couple of years. Avant's a great guy. He's been out of here a couple of years. I don't know if he has a finger on the pulse of things.
Okay.
A lot of us who get in there, it looks like a unified team. It looks like a team that is going through the frustrations of losing, not the frustration of disbelief in the coach right now. And one of the things from a personnel standpoint, Peterson has a little bit of that player's coach mentality. He's got a little bit of that let the men be men mentality. That usually buys you a little more time with a locker room full of veterans where they're not going to be like, oh, this guy's making us run wind sprints after we lost. Who does he think he is? There's not that kind of thing there. I don't think he's losing the locker room. I think he's losing the situational battles, the fourth and one battles, and all that other stuff that he won routinely last year.
How about the NFC North? You think the Bears have it to get it home, or you think the Vikings, I don't know, the Packers are a couple games back. How do you see that division shaking out?
I think there's going to be at least one wild card out of there. I'm watching the Bears very carefully because they are improving. And the scouting report I had on them, you know, at the beginning of the year when Mitchell Trubisky would mix like one great play with two crazy ones has now switched to like three or four great plays to one crazy one, and that makes a huge difference. So they have what it takes. I'm looking at their schedule down the road, and I guess what it says, we got the Vikings against the Bears, and I believe that's on Sunday night.
Yep.
I want to see that game before I make a decision, and then they'll play again. Also see the Bears do have the Rams on the schedule down the line. So there are some tough things where I think we're going to figure out the Bears once and for all. But I think they can work their way out of it. But I'll give you a more definite after I see them head-to-head against the team they have to beat.
Mike, what is your number one takeaway on the Le'Veon Bell business?
Well, I was just reading that the other players –
yep.
taking his name off the locker and have been distributing his stuff. They have been ganking his locker like it's a soldier in the medieval times. He's lying there. It's like grab his armor. That's what they're doing. And I don't have an emotional stake whatsoever in him. You know, I want to see him play football. I want him to see what's best for his career. I don't think he made a very good football or financial decision this year by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe he made a noble decision or one that he felt he had to make, and good for him. But the fact that the team is treating his locker room like it's a goodie hut right now, they can all like take his cologne and stuff like that, gives an indication of how they feel about him. And I think that's telling, because when a team circles the wagons against you, that's something that I think you have to think about as you make your decisions.
To what extent do you see the Steelers as being vindicated in this? Like, are you on team running backs are replaceable? Maybe, it still has to be written how it goes for the Steelers here, whether that's a Connor injury or something. Like, what would you say about that?
Yeah, it's easy for the Steelers to feel vindicated. And I think in the short term, look at how we handled our business. Maybe they feel vindicated. They also have $14 million sitting that they could have used somewhere that they don't get to use, that they could have grabbed, a pass rush or a nickel back that would have helped or something. So it's easy to feel vindicated. And I'm reminded of of an old story. It goes back to the player strike in 87, the replacement player situation in 87. And the Cowboys played hardball against all the old Cowboys, against Tony Dorsett and those guys. And fans were booing all those guys. And Tex Schramm said, you should never turn your fans against your players, because your players are the game. They're the team. They're the thing that matters. And I think the Steelers did do a little bit of that. I think the fans have turned against Le'Veon Bell. If they win a Super Bowl, all is forgiven. I don't think that's the best way to do business in the long term.
Where were you in 87?
I was in high school Philadelphia, in the greater Philadelphia area.
Yeah, me too. I was in high school too. Like, I wonder if you were covering that or anything like that.
in my mind, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the Bills had – I love 87 replacement trivia. Those games, like the Bills had three different starting. What did we talk about recently, Bulldog? With this, three different starting quarterbacks. We had Lawrence Taylor play
right.
For the Giants in a strike game, if I may call it that, against the Bills. It was a 6-3 game. The 87 Bills ended up on Saturday Night Live in a little what was that little segment they used to have? You Make the Call. They would have that during games, and they, I don't know, I'm just sort of rambling about this for some reason. Sorry to waste your time with that, Mike. Good.
Here in Philadelphia, we had riots outside the stadium because Philadelphia tends to be a little of a union town, and there were police on horseback crashing through strike breakers. So that was what was going on during the strike. When we think times are crazy now, I always have to remember, if you go back in history, even the history of your lifetime, times were a little crazier.
Very good.
No doubt.
On that note. Thank you, Mike. Thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure. Take care and enjoy your week, guys.